Hey everyone, before we get started, I just want to remind you that we are 90% of the way funded to our Kickstarter campaign for new live streaming equipment. If you can help us out even with just a couple of dollars, please log on to trib.it/kickstreaming and give us a quick donation. Thanks so much.
Texas talking. Oh, what was that you said? Texas talking. Gonna hoop upside your head. Texas talking. Tell me, who can you trust when Texas gods are in Texas? Texas talking.
Welcome to the Tribcast. This is Paul Brown at YNN in Austin, host of the nightly political TV show Capital Tonight, where politicians, pundits, and policy wonks indirectly help keep my kids in college. And now, here's your host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the third week of October. And thanks to Paul for doing that. He often has us on his show, which is a real show, so the least we can do is
have him on
have him on this thing. I'm joined by editor Emily Ramshaw.
Good day.
Reporter Jay Root.
Howdy.
And Jim Henson of the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas at Austin.
Jeez.
And the Texas Tribune.
It's a mouthful.
Greetings. I'll just say one thing.
That wasn't one thing.
Well, we are in the midst of a week, at least in Austin, of torrential rain. And so conveniently.
So we clearly don't need any water funding.
I actually had a reporter send me a follow-up question for a story. Does the rain make it worse?
Well, let's get to that after you explain what you've been polling about and what it found.
So with the support of the Meadows Foundation, the UT Texas Tribune poll did kind of a special one-shot on water and the water proposition that's going to be on the ballot in November. And we found, I think, not to very many people's surprise, a lot of support for it. In a vacuum, 52% in favor, 19% opposed, and sort of everyone else either not having any idea what we're talking about or saying they hadn't thought about it.
They're just not thirsty.
But even if they all came down on the side of opposed, you still have a slight edge for in favor of it, right?
50-something.
Exactly. A slight edge. And, you know, the tricky thing about this is, as I think everybody that's written about this has said, is
why are you pointing at Todd when you say that?
Is that you don't really know how many – I was just doing one of those hand gesture things. But it wasn't the one you were talking about. It was the pointy one. You have to figure out who's going to turn out and vote on a constitutional election. Turnout is tremendously low on these last – in the 2011 election, less than 4% of the eligible electorate turned out to vote. If one of these things is a huge gangbuster election, maybe you get 15 to 18. So you have to look at that 52-19 and then start filtering out, you know, who you think is going to show up using likely voter screens. I think if you do that, you look at support being, you know, really probably settling in the low 60s.
I mean, is anybody paying very close attention? We've had Rick Perry, you know, sort of trotting from water source to water source in Texas to promote this. We have Strauss has his, you know, pack. I mean, how much are voters attuned to what's happening, or is that sort of just a dog and pony show that doesn't matter in the end?
Well, they're not very attuned to it. I mean, I think the trick here that we've been seeing going for a while is that the trade groups and the people that have been interested in this are planning on the low turnout election, and they're mobilizing their troops and have been for a while. I gave a talk to a professional association last week that's interested in this, and clearly their members all had, you know, vote yes on six buttons. I sat and watched panelist after panelist in their government affairs thing talk about how important it was. I think there's a lot of that going on, because it's a low turnout election and people are assuming that the public isn't going to be too tuned in.
So how do you pick up whether or not somebody really is going to vote?
Do they live in Houston where there's a mayor's race?
For example.
There's
a certain amount of reading tea leaves. I mean, the technique you use is you ask a set of questions that you can use to build filters. So we ask, you know, how often do you vote? You know, what is your tendency to vote? That's one way of predicting. How much attention do you pay to current affairs? Do you pay to politics? How much have you heard about this constitutional election? And you can take those. Those give you three or four responses each, and then you can mix and match those. There's a great table in the piece we wrote in the Tribune, and there's an interactive version of it at the Texas Politics website at UT.
So you're predicting passage, easy passage.
I'm saying that right now it looks pretty much like something would have to really shift for it to f- for it to not pass. If you all the likely voter screens we ran, you know, you couldn't really get it down below 29% in favor.
What if Ted Cruz embraced it?
Well, that would probably help, since the only real pocket of opposition, and it's not a very big one, is
right.
among extreme conservatives
Tea Party
and,
folks.
Right. And some Tea Party folks.
You have like Deborah Medina and her group We Texans have been pretty active in opposing this, but don't we sort of think of them as the hyper-engaged sorts that would definitely vote?
Well, we do, and I think that is one of the I think that is one of the things that is giving the trade group some pause.
Well, they may turn out more even in the primary setting than they do in a general random general.
The
like
thing
this.
Is, even among that group, Reeve, you still only got about 29% opposition. I mean, I think there's some cross-cutting cleavages here, in that on one hand you've got this.
They're very emotional.
I get choked up whenever we talk about the Tea
cleavage.
Party and cleavage. Cross-cutting or otherwise. My wife tends to not listen to the Tribcast.
Good thing.
Even though she's done an introduction. So, you know, basically you've got Tea Party members that on one hand don't want to spend money on anything, are suspicious of big government spending dipping into the rainy day fund. But you've also got a lot of rural and suburban Tea Party folks, and Tea Party folks from North Texas, where the water issue is kind of important.
And so does the rain make a difference?
I think it might. It might a little bit, but not a lot.
One way or another? Someone out there might say, oh, well, it's been raining. We don't need water for
clearly,
that.
We got like
someone
11
will
inches.
Do that.
Did you see what ACL looked like?
Yeah, to the extent that every time, you know, the weather cools off, people say there's no global warming, it could make a difference around the edges. Call me an eternal optimist. I'm hoping that that's not very many people.
Are you making a formal stance on climate change here on the Tribcast?
I'm afraid I am.
Are you making a formal stance on your position as an eternal optimist?
No, that's informal. Formal stand on climate change, informal on optimism. That could change.
Can you tell which
could change by the end of this Tribcast.
Can you tell which of the three of us is going to vote? Based on just visual cues?
Yeah, I think all three of you are going to vote.
Okay.
That's not really, a visual
that's cue. Really that's eternal optimism.
I feel bad you left out Todd. I think Todd's going to vote too.
Oh, nice. That's great. Did you look at any of the other constitutional amendments?
No, we did not.
Should we look for that in the future?
Only if you've got a big check to write to Jim.
Not to me. Yeah. To the Tribune.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Start a Kickstarter.
Yeah, right.
Looking forward to the next election, the primary election, the lieutenant governor's race is probably the hot race right now as far as primaries are concerned.
Muy caliente.
Yeah. We haven't even gotten to the issues yet. That's just the candidates. What's the latest on that? We have David Dewhurst has had an interesting week. Can you fill us in on that a little bit, Jay?
I don't know if I can or not.
I can fill you in on it.
Go ahead.
Well,
you go ahead.
Can you fill Jay in on it?
Sure. David Dewhurst went to, you know, this.
He said
David,
he wanted to impeach
he wants
Obama.
To impeach,
I saw that.
You gave up the chance to
I'm
fill
sorry.
Us in.
I mean, I did see if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Dewhurst went to Tarrant County for a Tea Party event, and he was quoted saying that he thought that Obama should be impeached over Benghazi and a whole sort of litany of other factors. It's unclear whether any of the other candidates who were also at this forum said the same thing.
Did he say a litany of specific other factors or just a litany of other factors?
He said he named some specific ones, including health care.
He recited the litany.
Yes, there were three. I think
sure
there were three.
Did.
There were three things that he remembered to say.
Benghazi,
health care.
Specifically choosing winners and losers in health care.
Correct. And that,
that
actually,
counts as one thing.
And I can't remember the third thing.
You're in
good company. Hilarious.
I really can't remember the third thing.
Oops.
I don't know if there was really a third thing.
There were three things that he said.
Okay.
Anyway, regardless, Morgan wrote a story about it. And this got quite a lot of attention on our website. I think the only other, Republican in Texas recently who's come out saying something sort of along these lines was Blake Farenthold, who said he didn't think it was a good idea, but he thought that they had the votes in the House to impeach Obama.
Probably the only Republican who's come out saying that with a recorder around.
Or wearing pajamas, footed pajamas.
So only Republican to be photographed in pajamas. Ted Cruz even has sort of been like, impeachment is not the thing we need to be focused on. We need to be focused on defunding Obamacare or shutting down the government, I guess. But, I mean, so Dewhurst is out to the right of Ted Cruz and everyone else.
Better
running,
late than never.
Running for lieutenant governor on this issue. Does this help him or hurt him?
You know, it's hard to know. I mean, he has just really been – it just seems like with Dewhurst that since he lost to Cruz that he really is grasping at trying to be, you know, that conservative that everybody wants, and he's in a competitive primary now, and that's not where you want to be if you're the incumbent.
I also think if you're gonna take a stance that strong, you really got to land it. And he definitely didn't, right? I mean,
I don't know. None of us were actually in the room. We don't know how it was
right,
received.
Chris Hooks of the Texas Observer, former Tribune intern, did a lot of the reporting on this.
Before he was escorted out of the event, I think too many people saw him tweeting, and then suddenly he was booted. So we don't know how
Same thing happened to him here at the Tribune.
But, you know, Dewhurst staff, you know, those folks weren't even necessarily in the room where it happened, and they were pretty quick to confirm it to us. So I think this only plays well, obviously, with the base.
I don't think it hurts him.
Yeah.
Really? Even though he got a pants on fire for saying there was a live stream of the Benghazi attack in PolitiFact. I don't know if that hurts him.
Yes, PolitiFact. The kiss of death for conservatives. You're killing
just,
me.
You know, like on Fox 7, I was watching Fox 7 last night, and they had a camera on him after his comments, and they were
Paul Brown is going to be really offended.
No, I usually watch YNN, but it was my roommate had the channel.
Blame it on the roommate.
Yeah. Right. He chose the channel against... Oh, I was, you know, out of commission. But...
how he is most evenings after work.
And what did it show?
The cameraman went up to Dewhurst and they said, "So what are you talking about?" And he goes, "Well, look, I have to follow. I'm an elected official. I have to follow laws." And they were like, "Okay, so why should Obama be impeached?" And he goes, "It's a conversation to have later." And then walked away. And it was like, if you're going to say impeachment, you got to do it. It's sort of like, well, we have all this sort of iffiness around the impeachment of Wallace Hall because people can't quite nail down exactly the issue.
What he did.
Yeah, that he's going to be impeached on, you know, or if he is going to get to that point. Right now they're just investigating it, and they're going to have hearings about it next week. But it just seems like you got
good higher ed segue.
I think maybe, you know, like Jay Patterson had his sort of nutty thing earlier this week that is going to play well with folks where it was sort of – he said we need to toss four states out of the union, right? But he was like, look, I'm kidding. But it still sort of shows you he's a conservative with a good sense of humor. Not saying like a strongly worded like we need to impeach the president and not being able to follow up on that.
Well, but see, again, that's what I think is kind of the spectacle that we're looking at. I mean, everybody expects Jerry Patterson to kind of say edgy, sort of nutty stuff, mm-hmm. some of which he says he's kidding about and some of which he's not kidding about. Everybody sort of expects, Dan Patrick to be a bomb thrower. I mean, he's been a bomb thrower the entire time. But with Dewhurst, we've sort of seen this moderate figure governing. And then now, you know, after the Ted Cruz defeat, we see this just lurching to the right as quick as he can.
With abortion and everything
and
else.
I think the question would be, for example, on in-state tuition. Now he wants to abolish in-state tuition. Well, that
in-state
law...
For undocumented
immigrants. And it's been on the books since 2001. He's been lieutenant governor since 2003. I mean, this hasn't been something that he's been demanding at the beginning of any session that I've been at, have attended.
And Jay's been at many.
And yet, you know, now this has become a big issue. And so to me, the question would be, are these credible sort of proposals, you know, far right or staunchly conservative proposals coming from someone who rightly or wrongly is seen as more of a moderate? I'd love your opinion on that, Jim.
Well, I mean, I would quibble a little bit with the presentation of Dewhurst as a moderate. I mean, I think he was just kind of a mainline conservative who got outflanked on the right and was overtaken by events, but that's a minor thing. I mean, I think you put your finger on something really interesting in the lieutenant governor's race, and frankly, in a Republican primary and what the Republican primary electorate looks like now, and that is, for all that urban intellectuals don't think it matters, authenticity is a huge mm-hmm. factor in the Tea Party primary, and that, I think that's what you're getting at. It's one thing to just jog to the right and continually try to push the right end of the spectrum in a Republican primary and be more conservative than the other guys, but they have to believe it. And I think that's the problem that Dewhurst has. Dewhurst has an authenticity problem, and I think that That is a problem that Patterson and Staples don't have in that race, and I think that it's something.
I don't even think Patrick's got that problem.
Patrick had that endorsement of, or sort of going after Cruz and backing Dewhurst, and now he's trying to walk back.
I believe Patrick is a little more vulnerable on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, there's all this fire breathing that goes on, but you've also got a guy that, you know, changed his name, has been part of the talk radio kind of shock jock complex, and is now talking about, you know, family values and all this kind of business. And I think the other campaigns are pushing that. I mean, I'm not being a campaigner here. I mean, I think you're already seeing the other campaigns push on that. And it's a very interesting dynamic.
There are campaigns that will only refer to him by his original last name.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Go.
I mean, I accept him as Dan Patrick. It's not my problem. I mean,
he did legally change his name.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really one of the interesting dynamics there, is that the Tea Party people, they're purists. They're demanding authenticity and the real thing, and that's Dewhurst's problem, I think.
But this seems to push them to areas where even Abbott won't go, right? I mean, what did you think of his take on in-state tuition this week?
Go ahead, Jim. I'll tell mine after you tell yours.
Why don't you leave the room, sort of like the newlywed
Well,
game.
You know, I mean, this is going to sound horribly. I mean, you know, the Tribune just posted a piece we wrote that I think immigration is a real.
That does sound horrible.
I know. Imagine how I feel. Yeah. You know, Abbott is in a difficult position on immigration. I think he has spent some of the campaign already looking forward to the general election. And I think all the talk about immigration and much more restrictive, and in some ways, is, I think, is incendiary talk in the lieutenant governor's race, actually bled over and put Abbott in a hard spot, where he had to sort of take a position and then kind of took a fuzzy position on that based on the comment that his campaign submitted to Jay late the night that this all came up last week. And it basically exposes a difficulty, I think, for the Abbott campaign. You wrote about it, Jay. What'd you think?
I thought what was interesting about it was that all day long, and I found out after the fact that I wasn't the only reporter who was doing this, but all day long we were trying to get an answer from the Abbott campaign about where he stood on in-state tuition. I mean, it seems on one level it's pretty... it's a pretty easy question in the sense that
a political landmine
on the books, though. It is, the law is on the books, and so it's not like you have
not a hypothetical.
And not only is it not a hypothetical, but it was a huge issue in the 2012 presidential race. And if you talk to the Perry people, and they'll say, "Look, we were dead when Oops came along, and the reason we were dead by the time Oops came along is that the in-state tuition." You know, landmine blew up on us. And I can remember talking to some of the people, some Republicans who were close to both Perry and Abbott, who were marveling in a bad way at how Perry did not have an answer to that beforehand. Like, how could you go into a debate like that and not have a better answer? Well, by the same token, how could Greg Abbott, how could his campaign, you have to wonder in a way, how could they not have a position ready for public dissemination? Sooner or later, that's going to come up. Plus, it had been raging for several days in the lieutenant governor's race, and yet we call and it's like, I mean, it was radio silence. It was nothing. Nobody got anything, any calls back, nothing. And I'm told from other reporters that the same thing happened. And then very late at night, like literally like 10:30, almost 11, we get a statement that can be read a whole bunch of different ways, which is basically, it's sort of a version of mend it, don't end it, which I don't know if you remember that Bill Clinton applied that to affirmative action. But, you know, another hot potato was like, let's figure out some way to split the baby here.
But this sort of tracks with what Staples answer, because he's the only one of the candidates that voted for the actual law, and he said, I voted for it, but it hasn't, but it needs to, there are elements of it that sort of didn't work that need to be fixed. Right?
But at some point, don't you have, isn't he going to have to say what that means?
I mean,
I guess, can you vague it up all the way to November?
I was going to say, you think he thought maybe he could get through the primary without having to address it?
Right. I mean, I think he can
get through the primary without having to do a lot of things. Right.
Right. So maybe his assumption was just that, you know, he didn't need to say anything at all.
Yeah, well, I guess that's true. But I mean, you know, he's I've got to think that Greg Abbott is not at all worried about his primary. Mm-hmm. I have to think that. Mm-hmm. And I know that Tom Paakin, former Republican Party chairman, wants to be competitive. He's obviously struggling to raise money, and he's certainly been an energetic and active opponent of Greg Abbott. But whether he's at 0 or 1% in the polls, and so you have to think that Greg Abbott is thinking right now that his opponent is Wendy Davis. And so if that's right. The case, does this answer make sense? And
that's what I mean
know.
About
does
getting
it?
Through the primary, though. He doesn't really have to take any kind of hard line on this because he's going to have a more sort of middle-of-the-road response by the time that he gets through the primary.
Well, yeah. So the problem is, does he get kind of pushed into this? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, only if you ask people about in-state tuition, GOP primary voters only approve of in-state tuition for, within the rubric of this program, more or less, at a rate of about 20%. So, as you said, Emily, it's a minefield for Abbott. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he would really, their ideal strategy would be for, the lieutenant governor candidates to basically just
hush,
stop.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Please keep quiet.
Doesn't it seem like this is exactly the kind of position you'd expect him to take in a general election? And it seems like you can make it make sense. Staples has sort of made it make sense.
But you have to realize, though, that it's a complete repudiation of what Texas was not so long ago. I remember when George W. Bush said family values don't stop at the border, and when Rick Perry was very proud of the in-state tuition law. And of course, during the presidential race, they were like, God, geez, I wish we hadn't done this. It was right before 9/11. It was in the session that ended right before the 9/11 attacks, after which this became increasingly unpopular, then the economic downturns, and then it became a huge liability.
It didn't become increasingly unpopular after 9/11, did it? They revamped the law in 2005.
What I mean is
with virtually no opposition.
But how can you take a strong stance on this right now against and be trying to do all this dramatic sort of outreach into the Hispanic community?
Well, see, and that's what's so interesting about it is the day before, on Wednesday.
Have you been in the Valley?
No, he was in Houston. And appeared with the Republican National Committee, and Aaron Pena was there, and he's the chairman of this new outreach group. And so, at the very moment that they're rolling out their big effort to appeal to Latinos, it's like, okay, here's a huge divisive issue for you.
There's nothing very surprising about this, right?
Right.
I'm not convinced that it's not necessarily. I mean, like. You don't have to. Did he have to come out and say, I'm against this, for it to be a strong stand? He basically said, it's a good idea and we need to tweak some things, which is maybe a bit wishy-washy, but maybe that's, what he thinks the answer is. It's not. It is a stand. It's a totally substantive position on the issue.
Well, it could be. Yeah. I mean, if it put a little bit of meat on the bones and say, look, this needs to be changed. And you're right that once you get past the primary, which, again, you're not worried about, then you can say, yeah, I think this is a good thing. He said it's noble.
Yeah.
He said it's noble. So if you're worried, I guess if you're worried about a primary and you're calling a program noble that a lot of people don't think is noble at all.
Right. It's just one step away from saying that you're heartless if you don't believe in it.
Yeah.
Well, I still think that underestimates what's going on inside the Republican Party right now, which is that there is a real difference between the folks that are designing the outreach strategy, the folks at the press conference, Aaron Pena, the people that are thinking about the long term of Latino outreach, and what's going on in the Republican base. I mean, it is, completely. I mean, you ask about, the nuance in the Abbott answer. None of that nuance is present in public opinion in the Republican Party right now. Republican primary voters are restrictive on immigration. They are against in-state tuition by, 75-80%. They oppose comprehensive immigration reform because of the path to citizenship. It's like clockwork.
And I got several tweets where people were saying, no amnesty, that they look at this as amnesty. In-state tuition is amnesty.
And so, it matters. And that's the other piece of this that I think we've left out. That is, if you go and you ask people in our polling, what is the most important problem facing the state? Overwhelmingly among Republicans and among Republican primary voters, and especially among Tea Party voters, it's immigration and border security. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, look, is it going to lose Abbott the primary? No. But if you're looking at a race that may be a little more competitive than you thought, this is more bad news.
It's more bad news in a general election, from a turnout perspective, because people are like, let's say he's in a debate with Wendy Davis and he says nice things about immigrants, that could hurt him, then he sort of does.
Is that sort of him doing to Bill White camp comes in and basically says, "I'm just a Republican as the Republicans." So then everyone just votes for the Republicans, right?
Right.
Is that him coming in and be like, "Oh well, then forget it. If it's just two liberals up there
and Democrats, and more importantly, Democrats don't show up." Right.
Let's say that you have Deb Medina. Let's say that she flips and runs as an independent. Then all of a sudden, she's an independent gubernatorial candidate. Then it's like, oh well, you know, she's against in-state tuition, right. So let's just vote
and
for her.
And that's why, I mean, look, I agree with you, Reeve. I mean, I think the Abbott position, like the Staples position, it's a perfectly coherent, reasonable position from a policy perspective, and from a rational perspective of asking somebody, well, what do you think about it? Well, I think it's okay, but it could be a little better.
Yeah, right? But I'm sure there are perfectly rational solutions to the government shutdown, and look how that's going.
Well, right. You're talking about having meat on the bones of some of these. I mean, he hasn't exactly laid out any policy proposals yet.
Well, see, that's the thing. The impression that I get that one of the problems that people cite on there is that there's a little checkoff box when you get in-state tuition as an undocumented immigrant that says you're going to apply for permanent residency. Of course, you don't qualify, you know. I mean, like, so it goes nowhere. They throw them out or whatever. Although, I guess with the executive action that Obama took, gives these people more time and allows them to work for a certain amount of time. But I don't believe that they're applying for what it is they say they're applying for. The question is, how do you fix that? I mean, how do you fix that as a state? It's one of those things that you know, apparently it's not followed up on. But if you did follow up on, what would you accomplish?
Just take the box off the form. And then no one's promising anything they can't follow through with.
You know, I think from a political perspective, you know, it's instructive to think about how Rick Perry addressed this. I mean, you talked about how, you know, he got in trouble for it in the presidential campaign. But immigration, I mean, this sense of, we were talking about the timeline of when people started thinking more restrictively about immigration, right, particularly in the Republican Party, it was impacted by the rise of the Tea Party. Rick Perry very effectively rode that wave. Mm-hmm. And the way he rode that wave was by finding an issue that cut across all these things and that, you know, honestly kind of barely made sense. And
sanctuary cities. Yeah.
Right.
Can we, before we get into the sanctuary city rabbit hole, can we cut over to the Democrats and do a couple of minutes on the entrance of Kinky Friedman onto the Democratic ticket, or trying to get onto the
Talk about a lack of authenticity. I mean, seriously, there could not be any candidate more opportunistic than Kinky Friedman.
This is because Kinky Friedman previously ran as an independent.
He ran as an independent. He endorsed Perry in the presidential
race. Now, this is interesting. His campaign denies this.
What?
Oddly.
I have a recollection of us writing a story about it with his quote.
I did write that story. And
oh, you did?
Well, he wrote a column in the Daily Beast saying Perry for president, essentially, which is pretty unambiguous. I guess he's a humorist. He could say he was joking. Well, but I don't think that's going to
fly. No, I mean, he wrote at length about how, you know, the Texas's economic situation, you know, was largely credited to having someone strong at the helm. He totally endorsed Rick Perry. And now here we have him, you know, trying to ride Wendy Davis's coattails and taking a shot at ag commissioner.
He also previously took a shot at ag commissioner as a Democrat, so he has run as a Democrat before.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything he could do in terms of bringing independents or non-traditional voters onto the Democratic ticket? Not that there's really a ticket, but you know what I mean.
In a vacuum, maybe. You know, with this talk about pot legalization, et cetera, but it's not going to happen in a vacuum. I mean, I think, you know, there are trade-offs, you know, which is, you know, on one hand, you have a Democrat at the top of the ticket, most prominent Democrat, probably, you know, one of the better candidate, you know, if not the best candidate they've had in several cycles, at least from the perspective of how it looks now. And then you have somebody who is, you know, epitomizes really everything that's bad about politics right now. You know, he's not serious. He's opportunistic. He's self-serving. He's completely personality-driven to the extent that you want to that makes sense to call him that. I think he's absolutely a net liability. And
he would be a liability, but doesn't he have a competition in the primary? Isn't there a Democrat? I thought there was another Democrat that
I
was
think
running
right
for
now.
Ag.
It's sort of the Democratic ticket is sort of lining up without any primaries so far. I mean, we have John Cook for land commissioner, Sam Houston for AG, Letitia Vanderpoot for LIGOV. I mean, these are all hypotheticals, yeah. Right? Except Mike Collier for comptroller.
I thought there was another ag commissioner candidate.
I can't remember. There were rumors, I thought, at one point, right. But I don't think there's anybody really.
So there's still time. I mean, the filing deadline, and it may behoove the Wendy Davis's supporters to find somebody to try to beat Kinky Friedman, because you would sort of have this spectacle of, you know, the Republicans would be able to say, oh, the Kinky Friedman ticket, because Kinky is pretty well known. I mean,
is there anything he could do to turn the perception that he's not serious around?
I don't think so.
He's running on pot legalization and legalizing casino gambling, issues he takes very seriously.
He definitely believes in those two things, but I think the fact that the pot legalization is really like on the top of his platform basically means that this is a no-go.
I mean, you know, look, I mean, I think actually if we went out and, you know, there's been some polling done recently that shows that people's attitudes are easing up on pot legalization. Mm-hmm. I think that's only part of the problem. The problem is not just the message, it's the messenger, right? I mean, you know, he's had his shot, and people weren't buying it. And I think that...
Well, buying it is the key term. I mean, he's basically doing this so that he can continue to
sell
books and T-shirts
tequila.
And cigars. And,
yeah, I mean...
You know, it's like every other year he runs for something so he can have an income for a few months.
And it boosts his name recognition for...
Allegedly.
And it boosts name recognition for other products he's got. It actually, you know, just coincidentally, I was looking on Amazon just on a hunch. And it turns out, of course, that about a month ago he's re-released two compilations of stuff that he's done before.
I have a Kinky Friedman doll. Do you think it'll go up in value or down in value?
Sell it now.
Action figure doll.
Yeah.
It's signed as well.
We would like to encourage listeners to email questions and comments.
To jroot at...
to tribcast@texastribune.org. We'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music.
They are awesome.
Oh, you saw them live.
Right? I still want my CD.
Can't you just buy the album on iTunes?
You didn't say anything. You got a free CD. I know you did.
I did.
I heard that. I heard about it.
I worked in record stores for a long time, pal. I know how to get a promo.
Yeah. How do you think he got all this polling knowledge? I'd like to thank Jim and Jay and especially Emily and
especially.
Todd.
Especially. Oh, Todd. Just Todd got an especially sick. Also.
Yeah. Emily and Todd for sitting through this unserious thing that we're just using to promote our own podcast, I guess.
Action figures.
Yeah, our own action figures.
I have a tequila coming out soon.
All right, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening. It's just part of Evan Smith's package is all you need.
The Evan Smith package.
Gosh. I knew the moment that I said that word, we were going to be in trouble.